Welcome everybody to this week's installment of Midrash and the Parsha. We are going to be exploring a Midrash that connects both to this coming week's Parsha, Parshat Tzedakah, as well as to the Megillah. So for the title, this is prayer. So there will be a very strong Tzedakah connection in this week's Midrash. So let's get to it. So Parshat Tzedakah is one of those Parshiot that often people tend to glance over because it's always falls out around Purim, so you're too busy thinking about Purim to actually properly look at the Parsha. So what happens with Truma, right? So Truma and Tetzava talk about how to build a Beit Mikdash as well as a lot of the more technical aspects about how the Kohanim looked and how they would end up serving in the Mishkan and eventually the Beit Mikdash. So as part of their inauguration into being Kohanim, so we see the opening pasuk being Zeha Devar Asher Taser Lahem Makadesh Tal Machaheli Bekach Par Echad Bekar Beilim Shnayim Tamimim. So we see one of the first korbanot given to Bnei Israel to bring after they've done the korban Pesach. The first korban being brought in the Mishkan is the one to dedicate the Kohanim as Kohanim for Aaron and his sons, and it says, Zeha Davar, Asher Ta'aseh. This is the thing that you shall do. So the question that the Midrash is going to come and ask is, this is a very strange phrase to have, the Zeha Davar. Right? Why does it start with that? It's why are we using a double pronoun to start off some of the first korbanot that are going to be given in the Mishkan? It seems a little strange. So to that's where our Midrash is about to build off. Okay? Zeha Davar, why is that there? So there's a whole list of different reasons in the Midrash. We're going to focus on one of them. Okay, so what is, as you'll notice, the Hebrew for a new interpretation is Davar Acher, something else, which works quite well with our Zeha Davar. So now, why does it start with Zeha Davar? So I'll read the Midrash in English, and if anybody wants to chime in at some point, everybody will hopefully have an opportunity to. Not to worry, there's plenty of segments, some of which have multiple people speaking, so don't worry, everybody will get a chance. Another explanation for Zeha Davar, this is referring to the pasuk in Hosea of take with you words and return to God. So what does that mean? So how does doing korbanot or anything else bring you closer to God? So the explanation comes from a pasuk in Tehillim, or actually two pasukim. Our two first halves of pasukim in Tehillim, the full version of which I have for you in English over here. I wash my palms with cleanliness and circle your altar, God, and to voice things aloud and to tell of all of your miracles. So one might think that the pasuk in Tehillim is referring to simply korbanot, but actually it's referring to prayer as well, and that's why it says. One might also offer just bold and random. The verse instead says, "Lashmiya b'kol todah," to give thanks aloud, shifting the focus from what you may think it is of offering a korban to being voicing thanks to God out loud. So not only important is, so you don't only think the only thing that matters is the korban. The answer is, it can also be fulfilled via prayer, which is important because because until now, the way that everybody has been communicating with God wasn't simply by offering korbanot, but had been through primarily through prayer, not through korbanot. So now we're going to have a back and forth. So who here would like to take the role of Bnei Israel, and who here would like to take the role of God?
I have a terrible complex. I'll be God. Which one is?
All right. Okay. So you're going to go second. Who'd like to go first and be Bnei Israel? So I'll be B'nai Israel then. Okay. So accordingly, the Jews say, Ribon HaOlam, Master of the Universe, the leaders sin and bring a korban, an offering, and it atones for them. Mashiach, the Kohen or the Nasi, sins. They can bring a korban and it atones for him. We have no korban.
That's me. He said to them, and if all the congregation of Israel is stray, and the matter is hidden from the eyes of the community, and they are guilty of doing one of the negative commandments of
what is God.
Of God. Okay. Of God. Yudkei Vodkei. Then, where is it? Then, if the sin guilt for which they sin becomes known, the community shall offer a bull of the herd as a sin offering. This is God also.
But we are poor, and we have not what to bring for korbanot.
So God says to them, words I request, as it is said, take with you words and return to God, and I annul all your misdeeds. There you go.
Okay, so what is the point of this back and forth here? So the point of the back and forth is that until now, right, so as we'll see throughout the rest of Sefer Shemot as well as Mivayekra, that there's a very heavy focus on bringing korbanot as a way to atone for your misdeeds. But sometimes there are things that you do wrong that don't have a korban, that don't have an offering that can make amends with God. The question then is, well, either if there is no korban or if you can't afford to bring the proper offering, how can you make amends with God? Is there any way to do tshuva without it? And the answer here is
prayer.
Prayer.
Words I request. Kahu imakem dvarim, v'shu v'al Hashem.
Right. From Hosea. So but the question is, we view this as, of course, this being the case. So why does Mishnah go out of its way to explain this to us? So part of that is because during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, as well as in the same as Middash as well, the Jews have the thought process that as long as they can bring a korban, they can bring the proper offering, it doesn't matter what they do. They think as long as they bring the korban, we're good to go. The only problem is that they forget that bringing the korban isn't the only thing that's necessary. You also need to verse with words and pray to God and ask forgiveness for what you have done wrong. So here it's going to emphasize not just the act of bringing the offering, but also what the words that go along with it are perhaps even more important than the offering itself, which is quite a hard thing to swallow for the Jews. So now, nowadays we're like, of course, but back then that wasn't quite a given. Okay, so now the question is: so what do we mean by speaking to God? Okay, so what is exactly meant by that? So here's the Midrash gives one option. What are these dvari they're supposed to be saying? What is this type of prayer that you're supposed to be using? So now we continue on with before of God and B'nai Israel. So I guess God goes first.
These words are none other than the Divrei Torah, as it is said, these are the Devarim that Moshe spoke to Al Yisrael.
All right, so that's how we know that it has to be words, that Torah is the way you're supposed to pray, using words of Torah.
Right, so they said to him, we do not know.
Right, so that's what Israel said, but we don't know. Like, we don't know any Torah. Like, how are we going to do this? So?
He didn't have an art scroll. So he said to them, weep and pray before me, and I accept it. Your ancestors, when they were enslaved in Mitzrayim, it wasn't for prayer that I redeemed them. As it is said, the B'nai Israel groaned from the work and cried out.
How did they pray when they were in Egypt? They did it. There was no words. They screamed.
They cried.
They cried. And that's what the truest form of prayer is, which is often invoked around the time of Rosh Hashanah for why we use the shofar, because it's the voiceless cry, right? No words, just pure prayer. So this is one option. So right. So then another question. Now we're going to second. Click the formatting here. Came out a little. Okay, it's going to adjust the. Looks like everything shifted in font size on me here. Moment. Yeah. Okay. I'm just really sure. Yeah. I don't know what happened here, but it's like all the font size has increased. So I'm going to. Let me just make it a little bit smaller so we can all actually see it. Sorry about that. Pretty sure it was readable earlier today. My apologies. Let's get rid of the people for now, actually. Okay. Moment. Okay. This one is similar issue. My apologies for that. It reset. I had them all, they were all much smaller font, and then I just decided to like what I did. So, about that. Okay, now we're all back to, the rest of them are all back to, are all in legible size. So, and we are good to go. Okay. Sorry about that. Backtrack. Here we are. So one option we had is wordless prayer of Jews screaming out to God in their Eden. But is there any other times when the Jews pray to God, and how do they do so? So we're gonna run through Jewish history a little bit, and we're gonna give some examples of when this occurred. So the first one was in the days of Yehoshua. So it wasn't for prayer that I made miracles for them. As it is said, Yehoshua tore his garment and fell on his face before the ark of God until the evening. So what did he say? And then what did God respond? Hold out the spear which is in your hands towards the city of Ai, for I give it to you in your hands. So notice here what he had done is he tore his garment and fell on his face. And that's what is afterwards why he's given the way that he'll be able to beat Ai. Is simply because of his tearing his garment falling on his face in prayer before the Aron of God. So now, and then it goes through other examples. We see in the days of the judges, as it happens when Bnei Israel cried out to God on account of Midian. Again, prayer being the operating action of the Jews do that leads to the eventual redemption. Similarly, in the days of Shmuel, it was not prayer that I heard. Sorry, this is meant to be said in the, I had heard their prayer, but was it not in prayer, but these aren't prayers that have words, right? Shmuel cried out to God on behalf of Bnei Israel, and then God responded to him. That's the same for Shmuel. And certainly we have that when the men of Yerushalayim, even though they had angered God, and God had been raining down fire upon, they had been bringing down enemy after enemy in the time of Yirmiyahu, because they went before me, had mercy on them, as it says, for thus said God, sing out joy to Yaakov. And how do we know that, and again, this is a major theme throughout all of Yirmiyahu, that, oh, I request for you not sacrifices and not korbanot, but words, as it is said, kli mechem veri. And this goes all the way back to our first verse that we quoted of David, that I wash my hands with cleanliness, not intending to make an offering, but to voice thanks aloud, for I am thankful to you for giving Torah. That the whole point of this whole section is to focus on, even though we're building the Mishkan, and the Kohanim are going to be serving there and helping you bring your Karbanot, oh, that's not the point. The point is to pray to God, even if you don't know, you don't have any precise words. And even if you're not able to offer any korbanot, the important thing is that you do so by cleaning your hands first and by being sincere in voicing your thanks for God. Not a focus on what you give as your contribution, rather on the fact that you prayed to God. Make sense? Okay. Seeing some nods. Good. Okay, see, oh, because it's repeated, that's why that looks like that. Okay, fine. Okay, we just went through this. Okay, so I guess it was the duplicate slides. I guess I had. Okay, I guess I see what happened. One of the slides, okay. We just went through this, there was doubled up. Okay, that was one option. Again, what is that? Davar, the point of the words being said, Davar is to remind us of Chui Mechem Gorim Meshuvah Al Hashem. To remind us that it's not just the korbanot that are going to be offered in the Mishkan that are important, but the words we say there as well. So now there's another option within explaining what chumash hadvarim means. So again, this is a little bit different explanation. So what do we mean by take a few words and by zadavar? So what is being chosen is the question. So what is being chosen? So here we have Moshe said, God chooses an abode for the God of yore, meaning God who preceded all those chose Bnei Israel. So this is the nation of Israel, in whose merit the world was created and continues to exist. Okay, so this is, again, this phrase in itself is a little bit of a non sequitur, but it'll hopefully make a little more sense once we keep reading the next part of the Midrash, and this one we'll come back to this. Okay?
Zadavar, Moshe said, this is the nation of Israel. So when you say Zadavar, it's just a reference to the nation of Israel?
Yes. The reason why the Kohanim are getting their job is because of the Jews. Right. Meaning it's not the merit of the Kohanim that allows them to become Kohanim, rather the merit of the rest of Bnei Israel upon which will allow them to become the Kohanim for everybody else.
Right. Got it.
Okay.
Yep.
So this is a little cryptic, but that's this part of the Midrash. The next part will hopefully be a little clearer. So now we're getting to how all of a sudden now we're getting to shift into the connection between Parsha Tetzave and Purim. Okay, so this is based on Pesukim in Sefer Dvarim, where Moshe is giving his final blessings to Bnei Israel, and we are reading a fulfillment of the nevuah given by Moshe in the time of the Megillah. Okay, so this is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's explanation for the parallels of the end of the Torah with what happens with Megillah story. With Shushan. Okay, who would like to read Rabbi Yehuda Nasi?
I'll read.
Thank you.
Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi said, banish from before you an enemy. This is Haman, as it says, the adversary and enemy. And why is he called an adversary and enemy? Rather, he is an adversary of God above and an enemy below on earth, an adversary to fathers and enemy to sons, adversary to me, Esther, and enemy to you, Ahasuerus. He said, destroy, these are Haman's sons.
Okay, so this is right. So this is saying how God, in his Moshe through prophecy, giving his last blessings to Bnei Israel, is referring to it ends up being fulfilled in the time of the Megillah. Okay, and note that we're quoting the parallel words that was from Dvarim, and then when they come up in the Megillah as well. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense so far? Okay. So now we're going to continue on with these Sukkim at the end of Dvarim, and seeing how they continue being fulfilled Okay. So next we have, thus Israel, about again, in case you're wondering where the town of Ein Yaakov gets its name, the answer is from this pasuk in Dvarim. So thus Israel dwells in safety, untroubled is Jacob's abode. There is no Ein except prophecy, as it says, for the Lord has spread over you a spirit of deep sleep and has shut your eyes, the prophets. So this means that there's something prophetic involved with whatever the word ayin is mentioned. Okay, so this is again part of the basis for why we that whole section in Dvarim is a prophetic section. Okay, so now, so that was what we just read. That was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's drasha connecting that section of Dvarim and Tzava to the Megillah. Now we're going to go to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Okay, so who'd like to read Rabbi Shimon Gamliel?
I can do that also.
Thank you.
Is that okay, Elaine? Yeah, okay. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said that God's love for Israel is so great that he changes the natural order of creation for them. God brings a man from the heavens and brings up dew from the earth, as it says, when the fall of dew lifted, and under heaven's dripping dew.
Okay. Fairly straightforward. God changes the whole world for the sake of the Jewish people.
With the man and the dew.
Right, with the man and the dew in the Midbar. So, and now as we continue on interpreting the psukim, now we are going to continue on seeing how that praise continues on to the Bnei Israel as time continues moving stretching forward. Okay, so since Moshe saw the reward for the righteous, he said to them, "O happy Israel, who is like you, the people delivered by the Lord?" So what does that mean? People that served God. So now we're going to see three phrases that might sound familiar from davening. So let me know one. The other two might not be quite as familiar. Because we tend not to quote them except on Yom Narayim. So here we go. So first one, it's so good. We're going to be parsing the psukim in Dvarim, where the verse said Magen Azrecha, right? You're protecting shield. So who is that amongst the Avot? That is the corresponds to Avraham, who we see Asher Magen Zarecha Biyadecha, who protects from enemies with your hands, which we invoke every day when we say the bracha of Magen Avraham in Shmona Esrei, right? In the Silent Amidah. Next we have Vasher Cherev Gavotecha, that the sword is your triumphant. So that is corresponding to Yitzchak, who stretches next out against the blade by the Akedah. Right? That's interesting how Yitzchak basically, even though Avram didn't really want to do it, Yitzchak kept stretching his neck out. I'll leave it there. For more on that, that's a share on the Akedah, which is, I know, a little gruesome. The point being is that he was that willing to sacrifice himself for God. The next we have that of Yaakov, right? Where it says that Yikachashu Oyvecha Lav, that your enemies shall be cringing before you. So this corresponds to Yaakov, as it says that Esav went to the land of Edom in fear of his brother. So there we see how each of the psukim were fulfilled. So we're getting to the Megillah part. Right. So, okay. And then the next pasuk says, and you shall tread on their backs. So when is this fulfilled, right? So far we dealt with how the nevuah of Moshe is fulfilled by the Avraham. But, well, that's kind of already happened in the past. But what about the future? So that we see being fulfilled in the time of when we step on when we step on Haman in Megillah. So who'd like to read the Megillah section? Volunteer, Ma, you got it? Okay. Elaine. Thank you, Elaine.
Elaine?
Where should I start?
And you shall tread on their backs.
And you shall tread on their backs is fulfilled in the day of Mordechai, as it says, Haman took the clothing and the horse. Who, what caused Mordechai to enjoy his greatness? Let us say, because he prayed at all time, as it says, Mordechai knew all that was going on. Once Mordechai saw himself in greatness, he did not become haughty and did not stop praying. Instead, Mordechai returned the same way he was before.
Okay, so now we're seeing what merit the Jews were saved during Purim. Notably, if you look through all of Megillat Esther, you will not see a single time the word prayer. Except, I mean, the closest thing is we have is when Esther is Hitzchanim before Achashverosh. But we never see the word anywhere, any direct references to God or praying to God, which is quite troubling. So the question is, so how is that possible? So the answer is that the Midrash is seeing that there's a lot of actions that look very much like prayer, and it doesn't need to tell us that, because, well, if it looks like if he's sitting down in sackcloth, then odds, what does that mean that Mordechai is doing? He means he's praying. People don't just sit in sackcloth for fun, right? You don't just sit there mourning with your head held low if you're, like, you know, for nothing. Obviously, he's praying. And we see that throughout the story, he keeps returning to his location by the gate of the city, which is also by the gate of the king's court, which is, and the Shara here, the gate of a city, is often a place for prayer. So then as the Midrash continues, so in terms of the fulfillment of certain prophecies and curses, so here we go. So now, so again, this is part of how we know that what was going on before was involving prayer as well. Okay, so who would like to read the final comeuppance that we give to Haman in the Midrash?
I'll go. So the Lord your God will inflict all these curses, not upon you, but upon the enemies and foes who persecuted you. So should you stop praying? Of course not. Rather, what does the next verse say? You, however, will again heed the Lord, just like Mordechai did, as it says, then Mordechai returned to the king's gate. After Mordechai was paraded around Shushan by Haman, then he returned to wearing sackcloth and fasting. That is why it says, take with you words, Devorim, and return to God. Here too it says, this is it, Zeh HaDevar. Since Hashem was appeased by Aaron through prayer, as it says, moreover, the Lord was very angry with Aaron to have destroyed him, and I prayed for Aaron also the same time by the golden calf.
Okay, so what is going on here? What do we see as we're coming back to after that whole long story? What's the point? We traveled through Jewish history. We started with the Avot. We mentioned about how God was with them. We spoke about how the Jews were in Egypt. They were only saved through one thing. Similarly, we saw it happening in the time of the judges, the time of Shmuel, the time of David, the time of Yirmiyahu and Yeshua and Yerushalayim, as well as the time of Mordechai and Esther. What ultimately ends up saving the Jews?
So it's prayer. So even though Mordechai was paraded around the city and being honored, he went back to sackcloth and fasting and praying.
Correct. Right. No matter where you wind up in life, and no matter how, whatever greatness you are, that you are still always supposed to be connected or turned back to God through manner of prayer. Which is also interesting to know that who is the source of much of our prayer that we say every day?
Chana
is one. And who else? Think in terms of a volume of verses stated every day. Who wrote most of them that we say every day?
David with Tehillim.
David with Tehillim, right? So, and who was he to writing that? David Amela, right? King David, right? He wasn't a nobody. He was very much a powerful, famous man, respected by all. Yet he's the one who sat down and wrote all these prayers to God. So it comes no surprise that paralleling David HaMelech, we have here too, we have Mordechai, who is, despite the fact that he is ends up rising to a power, to a level of power, quite similar to that of a king, albeit second to the king, he never stops praying throughout.
Right.
Which also is important for us in terms of what led to Aaron being chosen and all the descendants becoming Kohanim. It wasn't simply because of their greatness that lets them be chosen. Rather, their greatness comes because of their actions, right? Because Aaron is involved in prayer. That's why, and as well as because God only ends up agreeing to have Aaron remain being Aaron thanks to prayer, because again, God could have chosen to have after Abraham the Eagle. It could have been that be it. But instead, right, Moshe's interceding on and praying to God on Aaron's behalf, as well as on Bnei Israel's behalf, is what allows them to both remain being Bnei Israel and being God's nation, as well as for Aaron being able to become the God, and instead of becoming God's priests, for the exact same reason, right? It's that through the power of prayer is what allows the Jews to overcome quite difficult situations. And not only did it help them throughout the time at the Midbar and throughout the end of the time of Yeshua, Shoftim, and Shmuel, and Balachim, but it also very much helped them in the time of the Megillah as well, and that's why we're focusing on prayer heading into this coming part. Okay, I think that's a wrap. If anybody has any questions, feel free to ask them. If not, we'll hopefully be seeing everybody on Wednesday for our final installment in Supernatural Judaism. And if I don't see you then, I wish everybody a Purim Sameach.
Purim Sameach. Thank you very much. Purim Sameach.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chaim.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Good night.